The Secrets of Stargate is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to The Secrets of Stargate, episode 154.
General West, Jackson has identified the seventh symbol.
All right, here we go. We are about to try to make a connection.
All we gotta do is bust out of here, commandeer the ship, and fly on home.
Indeed. You say that a lot.
I know that this could be dangerous. But this is our job, right? It's what we signed on to do.
It was never about going home. It's about getting us to where we're going.
Hi, I'm Jack Barazzini, and you're listening to The Secret to Stargate, where I talk about the hidden meanings and deeper layers found in the Stargate movies, TV series, and more. And joining me today are Father Corey Stika. Hi, Father.
Howdy, Jack.
And Lisa Jones. Hi, Lisa.
Hey, Jack.
And Victor Lambs. Hey, Victor.
Hey, Jack.
Today we are discussing the third episode of Stargate Atlantis, Hide and Seek. We got a lot going on in this episode. We get a nice introduction scene with McKay. Getting Dr. Beckett is using, I guess this would be like an early form of CRISPR to alter his genes to give him access to the ancient technology, which we quickly see goes awry as he activates a personal shield that he is unable to penetrate with anything, including hot coffee or food. And he basically gives himself up for dead as he will slowly starve to death. But the main plot of this episode is the strange energy being is released by Jinto, the son of Christopher Heyerdahl. I cannot remember the character's name, so I'm just going to call him that. Howling. Yes. And we get a kind of a game of cat and mouse as this energy-eating being moves throughout the station, siphoning off power, and it's a race against time. So they try to figure out how to deal with this creature. One of the best things about this episode, though, is all the interpersonal and character interactions. We get a lot of those to build out this new team that we've been introduced to. And we get to see McKay be a hero at the end after all. What are your thoughts on this episode, Father?
This is a good one. This is, you know, of course, this is, you know, very much introduce the characters. You know, we know that we've been introduced to the characters, but we really didn't get to know them. Now we're getting to them no more. We get to see kind of Shepard's playful, mischievous side. I mean, the glee when he throws Rodney off of the balcony is just, and I shot him, you know,
in the leg.
Yeah. It's just, it was so great. I mean, just, we get to kind of get, see Shepard's kind of, like I said, playfulness, you know, McKay, of course, you know, get to see more of his defeatism and a little more of some of the other characters, some of the people who came onto Atlantis from the planet and stuff like that. So it's a lot of fun. I mean, there's a lot of fun things. You get to see more of Atlantis. We get to see, you know, play, you know, find out, hey, they've got teleporters. They're not ring teleporters, but they're still teleporters. It makes it a lot easier to get around the city that way, including not having to walk up the stairs. Yeah. And then, you know, Rodney recognizing that he can use the shield to his advantage to help save the city.
Yeah. What about you, Lisa?
I agree. It's just fun to have an episode. It's a bottle episode, very different than what we talked about last week. Yeah. In that it was done really well because it just gives you that opportunity to really get to know the characters, get to know the city, their interaction. And they throw in a little bit of what's going on. You know, is it Wraith? Is it this? And it turns out to be not something terribly dangerous, but you know, it's a great catalyst for seeing how they all react under this pressure. Mm-hmm. So I like it. It just kind of shows you what they're going to do with Atlantis going forward.
What about you, Victor?
Yeah, I like it. It's not often that we get a Jinto centric episode, so I'm always here for more Jinto. No, it is a very good, as you said, Lisa, you know, exploring the city and the characters exploring who they are too. And in that sense, it made sense to, you know, keep the episode on the city, explore the city, explore the characters. And what I love about this is that the character of McKay in this episode, I think, is pretty dial in to where David Hewitt keeps it, you know, for the next five seasons. So we get a lot of really good McKay moments, a lot of really good McKay Shepard moments, McKay Beckett moments. So it's just a wonderful episode.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I like that it wasn't super high stakes. Like, there's a threat to the station, but it's not, oh my goodness, the Wraith are back already, and this is a world-ending thing. It's a localized problem. It honestly made me think a lot of, like, Deep Space Nine. Mm-hmm. Like, just the way it was done, like, exploring this big old semi-derelict city and getting to see just how much they don't even really know about it yet. Right. So I like that a lot. And then there was a lot of good character interaction and character comedy. So it was a good balance of drama and comedy there.
Well, they introduced very quickly one of the themes that you'll see throughout the series is, hey, the ancients left this device. I wonder what it does. Oh, I shouldn't have done that.
Did I touch that?
Twice. They do that twice in this episode.
Yeah, we get McKay's personal shield that he activates, which he's super excited about until he realizes he doesn't know how to turn it off and he can't eat.
So what's kind of funny is we, in Secrets of Doctor Who, we talked about an episode from the first Doctor where a companion ended up with a personal shield, you know, due to some energy, whatever, you know, gobbledygook. And Dom even mentions, there's that Atlantis episode where Rodney puts on a personal shield and can't take it off. And it's kind of like, this is it.
Nice. It did make me think of the shields they have in Dune universe, where it's a similar concept. It protects your body, but you have to move through it slowly, and that way you can get through it. But I guess this one is just 100% all the time.
Well, you turn it off by mental, but Rodney's freaking out that, of course, he wants to be protected all the more because he's freaking out. And
I think they did that very well, you know, the gene therapy, and then he you know, tries it out. And then ultimately when it does come off of him the first time, kind of, you know, Weir sees through that right away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting how quickly they had Weir kind of dial into all the different people. Like she knew she had a really good idea that Rodney was going to be okay, that it was more about his own protection and that it wouldn't come off. She was just kind of like, he's not going to starve to death. Like the ancients probably fail safe. Rodney's just freaking out. Like we're fine. And, but you're right, Victor. I love the way we quickly moved Rodney to this space. You know, we had him in SG-1 and we forgot how obnoxious and really horrible he was to Carter and everybody else. And here he's obnoxious, but you love him. Like, he's kind of almost the glue for the whole cast because he interacts with everybody and in such a way.
And he's their like techno babble explainer, which is not an enviable position for any actor to be on any show.
No.
But he just does it so well and explains things. You're like, oh, I understand what's going on now, you know?
Yeah.
Well, and David Hewitt's kind of a geek of his own anyway.
Oh, absolutely.
So, I mean, you watch his YouTube stuff and things like that. He's a geek. I mean, he's a total geek. he's there for it. So,
well, it's like a dream job then.
Yeah. Well, of course, you know, we talked about last time, the 2 weeks ago now, when we talked about Atlantis, about the gene, the ancient gene, and how this issue of who has and who doesn't can be solved very quickly. This is how quickly it's solved. Literally, the next episode, they are already giving everybody the injection. And within a couple episodes, that's the last we hear of the gene treatment. I mean, it's just, it's done. Yeah. Everybody can control the station. Everybody can fly the ships, you know.
Mm-hmm. Of course, it's not FDA approved.
No. Do you have to get boosters for it?
Yeah. Emergency use only.
Just an experimental gene therapy. What could go wrong?
It's legal for using most
viruses.
Yeah.
It's funny how 20 years later that just all of that
it
has
just lands
meaning.
A little differently.
Yeah. So is this an MRA treatment?
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a really good scene.
It is.
Well, yeah. I like these. He's all not worried about it. Like, oh, wait. Well, what about? Did you, you know, and he's like, he's pulling his arm and finally Beckett just stabs it in as he's talking.
And apparently in all the takes they did, you know, because Beckett is, he has his, you know, his arm, you know, t- turn it, you know, tied off, and he's tapping the veins, you know, tapping the arm to get the veins. Apparently he did that so many times over so many takes that David Hewitt had this big red welt on his arm and was like complaining about it on set for weeks afterwards.
That sounds like a very Rodney thing to do.
Yeah. They did mention on the commentary, it was Paul McGillion, who plays Dr. Beckett, and Rachel Luttrell, who plays Taylor. Right. And then Tori Higginson stopped in for the last 10 minutes. It was a very weird commentary, but worth watching. But they did mention that there's not a lot of distance between David Hewitt and Rodney McKay. It's not a stretch for him to play that character. It's pretty much who he is. Yeah.
Nice. So something else I noticed, and I kind of noticed this during the first episode of Atlantis, but are they wearing like color-coded uniforms that are red for command and blue for science? And
yeah,
seems a little close to another military star franchise.
Yeah.
So nice.
Yeah, military is gray though. That's the only difference there. They're wearing the gray jackets and everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Weir still has her omnipresent like earpiece in that she had.
She's got a full earpiece. Everybody else has got just a little earbud. They got the little Apple AirPod.
Yep. This was like 2005. That was big then.
Yep. Well, she's in charge of operations and stuff, so she needs to be able to talk to everybody all the time.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, and like you mentioned, Victor, Jinto is kind of the catalyst for everything that happens. He and his friend are playing hide and seek, which I guess is where I get the title, hide and seek with the Wraith Mask, which...
Wraith and Shepherd is what they're playing.
Yeah, because he wants to play Shepherd and he has his friend wearing the Wraith Mask, which I feel like, I mean, I've never been through any sort of traumatic Warzone experience as a child, but... I feel like maybe they wouldn't want to be playing with the Wraith Mask right after their entire village was destroyed by the Wraith, but...
Well, it's good therapy to face your fears and stuff.
True.
I'm just wondering what that mask is made out of, right? Because they don't have plastics, the Athosians and stuff, so...
It looks like a leather.
Yeah. So there's like leather face.
Some kind of animal hair or something.
Actually, so...
Yeah.
Yeah. The abandoned city... From their planet, every October through November, it becomes a spirit Halloween, and that's where they go from. Okay.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
They go shopping.
Yeah.
and we do establish that they have trade with other planets and stuff, so I guess they could have bought Wraith masks from, Wraiths Are Us or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Think about that. They're all terrorized, and they all...
Yeah. I'm the happy mask merchant. I did like
the way they address the Athosians, how they're settling into Atlantis and what a huge change it is for them. You know, they're used to having the stars, the noise, the wind, they're not used to being inside like this. So, Taylor kind of being on the outskirts, that she's not accepted yet by Weir and everybody. And, just how they're all settling in together, because it's going to change, but it's really nice that they addressed it rather than been like, they're here. They're over there. It's not just about, the Stargate people. It's also about the refugees they took in. So that was nice. And to see how Taylor really is like a mother hen. I mean, she's the leader, but she's also very caring and nurturing for the Athosians.
Yep.
And that the Athosians are all depicted as like smart, intelligent people. They're not just like bewildered primitive villagers who are like, look at all this. They're like, there's technology and we can take it in stride.
Yeah, they're not unfamiliar with technology.
Yeah. Exactly. Have, yeah.
Right. Even they still use candles and things like that.
That would have been funny if the football watching scene, if Taylor had been like, what is this image?
Yeah.
No, they're not impressed with Shepard's, story about Jason, his Friday the 13th stories, or probably his nightmare. They're a great scene where he's like, he's talking to Holling afterwards after he's just described, Jason with the hockey mask. And then he's had to explain what a hockey mask is. Then he's had to explain what hockey is. And he says to Holling, like, I hope I didn't scare him. And Holling's like, I don't think so. Yeah.
And just kind of looks at him like,
yeah.
You're good.
He also must have been like explaining one of the later movies, because Jason doesn't even get the hockey mask till like 3 or 4.
Oh, really? That's funny.
Yeah. So she a little bit of random 80s slasher trivia.
I did get a kick out of Weirdo, and it kind of shows the time when Atlantis came out, where he, you know, Shepard had gotten this football. You assume he's got a bunch of football games, you know, like on recordings or whatever. Nowadays we think, oh yeah, you know, if I was going to go someplace like Atlantis, I would have, you know, a external hard drive just full of TVs and movies and books and you name it. You know, I'd have like everything. And she's just amazed that he picked this football game as one of his personal effects. It's just like, you know, nowadays we'd be like, yeah, that's just one of like every Super Bowl that was ever played. Yeah. And, you know, all these different games and all these different shows and everything.
Yeah, we established there that basically people got like one or two, you know, personal items that they could bring with them on the trip. And Shepard took this football tape because the game is such a good metaphor for life and victory.
My eyes kind of glazed over at that part because I'm not a sports person at all.
I love to try to explain the Hail Mary.
Yeah.
Both
yeah.
the play and the prayer.
Yeah.
Well, it's just prayer to the lady who just kind of leaves
it. Yeah. And he's like, did I tell you about like Ferris wheels?
Yeah. Back to the Ferris wheels.
I think there's a common theme, though, that he keeps trying to explain sports to them, right? That mm-hmm. keeps coming up throughout at least the first season. So I you know, we talked about this with Teal'c in SG-1 that there was always, you know, he doesn't know what things are and constant. And I like that with Taela and the Athosians, they didn't take it as far. Like,
yeah.
She's got a basic understanding of a lot more than they think she should. So she's not as impressed. You know, it's not like, oh, tell me about your planet. You know, it's.
What is love? What is this? In the original series Star Trek or something.
I kind of chalk that up to the fact that Teal'c was raised under an authoritarian military regime, and so he didn't probably have a normal life, whereas Taela, they have like, they're like living in a village, but everyone is presumably happy and not being coerced into fighting a war for evil snake dictators.
Now, admittedly, if the kids had, you know, if I was there and the kids said, can we play hockey? It's like, when we find an ice world, we'll teach you hockey.
Exactly.
There you go.
Yeah. And your Wraith mask.
Apparently, your goalie mask.
Apparently, Rhys Thompson, who plays Jinto, was a big hit with the rest of the cast. Like they would, and the whole Jinto thing, like they would say, like, Jinto, bring us some water. Jinto, go. Like they would just order him around, calling him Jinto. Which and then they said that he loved it, which I don't know if he did or not. But
that's funny.
But then funny. Yeah, and they were actually they would actually make up songs about him that they were going to work into a Stargate Atlantis musical or something. But the musical episode we never got.
Ah,
yes, Tori Higginson sings part of it at the end of the commentary. Apparently, the actress is a lot goofier in real life than her Dr. Weir character.
I would figure that.
Yeah.
That's funny. Oh, darn. Nice. We missed out on the musical episode in season 6. Shucks. Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
I don't know. I'm a fan of musical episodes of shows. Something different.
If you listen to any of my commentary on musical episodes and other podcasts, I'm not.
The Buffy one worked, but at that time, I think it was like the first one. And then after that, after everyone saw the Buffy episode, they're like, we got to do a musical episode for Scrubs. We got to do one for Psych. We got to do one for Star Trek.
Strange New Worlds.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I just have a hard time. Actually, with Atlantis, I can envision it a lot more than SG-1. Mm-hmm. I have a hard time seeing, you know, like Jack O'Neill, like start, you know, dancing. But I could totally see McKay and Shepard and, you know, I could see them.
Yeah.
Woolsey. Could you imagine Woolsey?
Yeah.
Which, by the way, Robert Picardo is an amazing singer.
Yeah, he is.
There's a reason why
singer.
They brought that in the Doctor. But, I mean, the character would not fit.
Yeah.
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 By the way, I think we'd mentioned it before, so no spoilers there. But, yeah, Woolsey comes onto Atlantis eventually.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yep. Looking forward to that. Anything with Robert Picardo is.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely worth it. I like how. There are a lot, this crew is a lot less uptight than SG-1 can be.
Yeah.
Because they're like, there's the military aspect to it, like with Weir, but even Weir, she's like, Shepard's the only hardened military guy there, I feel like, among the main people we see in this episode.
I mean, yeah, he's the senior officer, so yeah. he's got the most experience, because like his second command is a lieutenant. Well, he's young, you know, he's fresh out of the academy, you can imagine, yeah. or something like that. Actually, but even where she shows her humor, it's like, oh, you're watching sports, you didn't invite me, I didn't know you like football. I don't.
Yeah.
She's just there for the hot dogs and beer,
the popcorn.
Popcorn yeah. look good.
Popcorn.
Yeah, because she grabs a good handful yeah. of Ford's popcorn.
About to say McKay's there for the cheerleaders.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
I think we do have a serious military, I can't remember his name, but we do have one. Oh, Sergeant Bates.
Sergeant Bates. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a very, I mean, like, he was in the first episode, he was in Rising, and then we'll see him again throughout. But
yep.
But yeah, they set up Shepard to be kind of like what they might have had Jack O'Neill be if they didn't have the movie, you know, for him to be so serious. So he's a little, you know, off kilter, but they use Sergeant Bates going forward to be the serious military, strict rule following person.
Well, and of course, Shepard wasn't meant to be in charge.
Right. That's true.
Yeah.
You know, he was supposed to be under the colonel that got his life sucked out of him.
But he does. I mean, when Jinto goes missing, and it later turns out it's because he's transported himself to this ancient lab, you know, he does the right thing by searching around. And then once it's clear that there is kind of this alien presence, he has people fall back and like maintain a perimeter and stuff. So, you know, he's following, as I assume, procedure.
Well, and we know he's been in command in actual combat situations before. That was part of the whole thing of Yori. He disregarded a superior's command to save some of his troops.
Yeah.
It's just like the interplay between McKay and Beckett, like just their character interactions are a lot better. So
it gets
better.
I think they're already my two favorite characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we get a lot of Dr. Grodin in this episode too, Greg Veroni, who we saw, I think, as a tactical or weapons officer on the Prometheus last season. Not as that character, but the actor was there. You know, definitely a major force in the first season here is kind of the Dr. Lee, you know, scientist of everything, operations guy who, you know, we brought on to explain things.
Yeah. We get to see, I don't know how big the set of Atlantis was. I know you'd mentioned that it was from the Blade, was it Blade 3?
Yeah, Blade Trinity. It's a multi-level set, but they do a lot of redressing, like, you know, what was like a you know, someone's quarters one day, they'd come back and it would be a laboratory or something. So they do a lot of like really quick redressing of the set, but it's big enough that you could, you know, walk through it. There's a downstairs and you can walk up into the, you know, control room and stuff.
Nice. Yeah, they do a good job with making it feel big. Like, it doesn't feel like, oh, this is definitely a television show set. Like, so far, at least, they're utilizing the space well and making it feel expansive.
I mean, we do see a lot of corridors, but I mean, that's to be expected for something this big.
I like how the corridors are kind of like arranged on like a hexi grid instead of like, you know, like a rectangular grid and stuff. So that's kind of cool. We do see some of the maps and stuff. And we do get to reuse an SG-1 prop in this, the kind of, you know, containment, the subspace containment vessel for the energy entity. Is the sight unseen device that allows Jonas Quinn to see the bugs.
That was literally the next thing I was going to mention is, haven't we seen that device before?
But yeah, yet another failed experiment. And we learned that this was because the ancients were looking for help in learning how to ascend. And so they were studying energy beings to see if they could, you know, help themselves evolve a little bit. And we'll see a little bit more of how the ancients tried to, achieve ascension, I think, in this season and into the next season too.
I get the feeling that the more we hear about the ancients, the more we're gonna feel like maybe they were doing a lot of unethical science experiments.
Like leaving this creature trapped for how long?
Millions of years. Tens of thousands of years.
Yeah. And I like how they're all kind of like, oh, we'll just retrap him. And then Taylor's like, do you think maybe it went out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's well, of course, the bathroom.
Of course, it would have been a lot shorter. It would have been a lot shorter episode if they would have just let it dial up the gate and leave.
That's true. That's true.
Like it did at the beginning.
Yeah. But then they quickly find out that it likes to feed on the gate energy and, mm-hmm. and also their Naquita yeah. generator. And they never really say how many Naquita generators they came from Earth with.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If it was like 12 or 13. But they have a number of them.
They show five of them yep. that were actually hooked up to the city.
Right.
But yeah, there's more than that, obviously.
Yeah, because if they're willing to get rid of one within the first week, probably got yeah. a decent stash.
Yeah. It's not like Voyager where they can just print more shuttlecraft or something.
I was going to yeah. say that, yeah, with the climax being that they strap the Naquita generator to the MALP and are going to drive it through the Stargate. As they were doing that, I was like, this is already the second MALP they've lost. Exactly. So how many of yeah. those do they have?
They lost one through the space gate in the previous episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do like how we finally get like our main, crisis, which is that the beings like feeding on the gate energy and will basically, mm-hmm. you know, destroy the city.
Suck yeah. the city dry. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's growing. And McKay gets his chance to be a hero. He slaps on his his personal shield, activates mm-hmm. it, and then walks into the creature. And
that's I like that effect. The blobs yeah. floating mm-hmm. around as he's looking. You know, as he's in the creature. I like that effect. That was cool.
I also like how as he's walking in, like the shield, like because it's being hit by the creature, just like activates all over his body. That was cool to see. Mm-hmm. And he throws the generator through the Stargate and the creature follows it.
Yep.
I hope the creature's happy. He deserves yeah. to be happy after being stuck in that canister.
And the wasteland. Well,
this time
planet
it wasn't this time it was a desert wasteland instead of a frozen wasteland.
Yeah. Presumably there's like a sun there's a sun there that, you know, has some energy for him to eat.
Yep.
Oh good.
I guess, yeah. But that was a Hail Mary.
That was yep.
yeah.
Womp, womp. But no, it's no. And I think this particular shield device is drained completely for now anyways. So they can't just yeah. slap it on McKay anytime they want.
They say is that no one else can use it because it imprints on the
mm-hmm.
the yeah. first user. So it's imprinted on McKay now. He's the only one who can use it.
Mm-hmm. But I like that yeah. they gave you a device that could protect you, save you, let you be the hero, but oh yeah, we can't have that going forward because that would be too easy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be way overpowered.
Yep.
Captain Invincible or whatever the names they were coming up with.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I love how he spends most of the episode until the device falls off of him because he learns how to turn it off in his fear yep. being like worried about starving to death, and then once the device is off of him, from like that time until he puts it back on, he's just like eating constantly.
Yeah, he has his power bar literally like ready to go.
Yeah. Well, it was great where, you know, they're talking about things and, oh yes, this will be important for you because I'm already a dead man walking.
That's right.
Yeah.
Everything was about like, I won't be here to see it. Yeah.
Yeah. And nobody indulges him at all. They're just like, yeah, whatever.
Like, whatever. He's so good at physical comedy. I mean, you know, like the trying to drink the coffee and pouring it down himself and the yep. angsting, but at the same time, the sarcasm and the way, you know, his lines come across. It's just, you know, I hated Rodney in SG-1 and I love Rodney in Atlantis.
Yep.
So,
yeah. Do we ever get Rodney and Sam meeting again?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. Oh, mm-hmm. we get some very good episodes with Rodney and Sam. Not just Grace Under Pressure, but which is a really good episode. That's there's a minor character in Grace Under Pressure who I think is one of my favorite. He's only in for a few minutes, but he's one of my favorite Stargate characters. And then, Colonel Carter comes to lead the Atlantis base for a little while.
Yep.
Nice.
We get a really good one with her and then, you know, Kylie from Firefly or whatever.
Yep. But
awesome. Yeah.
But yeah, no, we do.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. I'm looking forward to that. Marty, really liking these characters and their dynamics and how much fun they have.
Don't worry. There are a few misses.
Ah.
There's a few characters that.
Well, there's one in particular that is so unlikable, but that's his whole purpose in being there is so unlikable.
Oh, yes, Kavanaugh.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I love Kavanaugh.
But we don't have our favorite Czech yet.
No, we don't. We don't have
our favorite Czech. He comes in a couple episodes.
That's true.
He's fun.
And we don't have our favorite Janai and our second favorite Janai either. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. I was thinking about Ford.
Ford's
yay. Kind of a...
Ford's not bad now, but yeah. No. They don't know what to do later on.
The character doesn't get developed like it probably should have. So somebody else kind of takes that role.
Mm. Yep.
Nice. Awesome. Did y'all have any other thoughts on this episode?
Nothing here.
No, yeah. I really like it. And a lot of like the great moments that I think of when I think of Stargate Atlantis are actually from this episode. Mm-hmm. You know, McKay saying, you know, the whole thing with him fainting. Beckett says, you know, he fainted and McKay's like, I passed out from manly hunger. I still say that like whenever I feel lightheaded, you know, I have to pass out from manly hunger. Yes. And then at the end, they don't say he fainted. They say he passed out. And, you know, it's a nice character moment at the end.
Yeah. Well, I love that when Beckett and Rodney are talking, Rodney doesn't recognize medicine as legitimate science.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
It's basically witchcraft, or voodoo. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. This episode just, it just gets you, it's kind of more in what happens in normal. And it just, get you excited for Atlantis in general. Mm-hmm. You know, see that they're doing a good job off the bat.
Yes, definitely. Did we have any alternate language titles for this one, Victor?
Yeah, most were hide and seek. In French, we get invulnerable or something, which is invulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
And then in, sorry about that, French people. And then in German, we get dunkelschatten, which is dark shadows.
Oh.
So yeah, I mean, there's nothing more fearsome than Dunkelschatten.
Yes.
Well, everything sounds fearsome when you speak it in proper German.
Except for that. But
I actually knew what you were saying before you did it because I've been doing German on Duolingo. So.
Oh, really? Excellent.
Yeah.
Nice.
Does Dunkel come up a lot? Or
It does, actually, in the lessons I've been doing. So.
I was talking about beer. Dunkel.
That's right. Dunkelbach.
True. Awesome. Before we go, we'd like to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create The Secret to Stargate, including Peter M., Cherry B., John H., Mike M., and Laura R. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue The Secret to Stargate and all the shows at StarQuest. And you can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. And be sure to follow the show on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Spotify, iHeartRadio. And you can find our video versions at youtube.com/StarQuestMedia. To find previous episodes of Secret to Stargate and to send feedback, you can visit sqpn.com/Stargate, where you can email us at stargate@sqpn.com and follow StarQuest on social media at facebook.com/StarQuestMedia or on Twitter at sqpn. And you can check out the SQPN Discord at sqpn.com/Discord. And we'll be back next time and we'll be discussing the next episode of SG-1, Zero Hour. Until then, Father Corey, thank you for joining me and sharing The Secret to Stargate.
Thank you, Jack.
And Lisa Jones, thank you as well.
Thanks, Jack.
And Victor Lambs, thank you too.
Thanks, Jack. And Jinto, go to sleep.
I agree. Jinto, please go to sleep. And once again, I'm Jack Berezini. Thank you for listening to The Secret to Stargate on StarQuest.
Anyway, I'm sorry, but that just happens to be how I feel about it. What do you think?
Here's another podcast on the StarQuest Network you're sure to enjoy. The Secrets of Movies and TV Shows. Find it wherever fine podcasts are found or at sqpn.com/secrets.